It's the Mayo News Football Podcast. I'm Rob Murphy, and Mayo are in an All-Ireland final, as you well know, but we just thought we'd bounce back into your podcast feed midweek to just see how you're all doing. Fair enough. Edwin, how are you doing?
Never better, Rob. Never better.
Great place to be. Man, people were in such a good mood. It was like some sort of 1960s Hollywood happy Townsville movie, John. I don't know what I'm referencing here, but I think there's some movie in my head. Everyone was skipping down the street on Monday morning in Ballinrobe and every other town in Mayo or all around the country if you're a Mayo person. John, how are you?
I'm good. And I'm actually on holy ground for, I think, quite possibly the first time after an All-Ireland semi-final that we won since 1989, I think. I don't think I was ever back before the final on any of the other ones. So, it was great coming down from Dublin last night, encountering the flags really early on, like in Ballinalak, I think I saw the first of them. And then every town after that, it was great. It was just great. Yeah.
Do you know, in one sense, it doesn't have anything like the giddy excitement, obviously, of 89, 96, 97, Edwin. We're all old enough to remember those. But like, it does have a sense of the awe and the possibilities. That's a bit different than maybe the semi-final wins of the last decade, if you get where I'm coming from, because the big bad wolf was usually around the corner in those days.
Yeah, and I think I think in its own right, even looking forward to the final is one part of it, but I think in its own right, as a standalone occasion and a standalone achievement, it stands very tall. And you know, Mick Foley said in the podcast, and it was within an hour of the final whistle when he articulated that view to me, that it was Mayo's greatest win since 1951. And I hadn't even come close to trying to contextualize it in such terms at that stage. But straight away, I was like, you're right. This beats 2006 and it beats 2012 and 2017 against Kerry. It bet all of them. And obviously, it would be sweeter still if, you know, Mayo go all the way now. But I still think it will be a game we will forever look back fondly on, because it was just such a tremendous occasion. And you know, the fact that there's a 2-week gap to the other semi-final, I think we can, you know, we can talk about this and we can enjoy it and soak it in, because there's no doubt, I don't think people are giddy and getting carried away or saying, oh, well, we have it now. Anyone I've met who've talked about an All-Ireland final has concerns about that, but everyone is so happy because of what they experienced the last evening. And it's amazing the impact the football can have. The amount of people I've talked to, people who you wouldn't think would even be following the game, and they're in high spirits because of it. It has just lifted so many people the length and breadth of the county.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I think you're right, Ed, that the time is good. I think Oisín McConville put it very well on the Sunday game. You know, when he said we need about a week and a half to come down off this, and then level off, and then get ready for the final. And I think that's right. You know, I mean, the great thing about it, and I think there is a great sense of satisfaction about it, is that, you know, Dublin were the greatest team that we've ever seen. Six in a row has never been done before, and the record books will for all eternity show that they were the first team to ever win six All-Irelands in a row. But the record books for all eternity will equally show that we were the ones who beat them at the end of it. And I think we do have to take a good degree of satisfaction in that, and I think in the appropriateness of it too, because we were the ones who pushed them closest all during that. They were great because we effectively made them great in terms of pushing them so hard. So I think there was a great sense of that it was right that we did it. And in what fashion too? I mean, it was just such a bonkers night, wasn't it?
One of the ways, Edwin, I try to think my way through my enthusiasm for sport is you try and work out how you're going to feel, and you try and, you know, say, okay, if this happens, I'm going to feel this way. And, you know, I was trying to tell them, maybe we shouldn't go too mental if we beat Dublin because we're trying to win an All-Ireland. You know, this kind of stuff. But you can I think I've finally, after all these years, and by God, it's taken a while, I think I've finally realized there is no point in trying to understand what something's going to feel like or how we should react to it. You nailed it when we talked about the league final. You know, people say, why do you celebrate a league final so much? And I think I heard you in one podcast, you shoot in there, goes, that was just the day, the way things played out, how things kind of came into line, if you like. And that's exactly what happens in every football game when it comes to Mayo. We may as well just sit back and take each day as it comes. I know that's obvious, but I think we need to think about that sometimes.
Yeah, and this is, I was making this point afterwards to someone. When you talk about big life events, you know, you have the highs and you have the lows, but, you know, the birth of someone, a wedding, etc., that's all in one direction. And then you know, if someone passes away, it's all in the other direction. The last day, it was just so all over the place. And that's what makes, I suppose, games like that are so unique when you're looking back and you know, you're just, your emotions are just brought on a roller coaster. And, you know, if the league final is an example. Nobody expected it to be the way it was going to be. And again, it depends on the nature of the game. If you compare this year's Connacht final to last year's Connacht final, last year's Connacht final felt like, bit of relief. This year's Connacht final was very different because it was a very different type of game. There was a comeback involved and there was a very encouraging second half performance. You know, so the nature of the game, we can have a plan in advance of what things are going to be like, but you know, you have to, I suppose you have to let your emotions ride the wave as well as they go, like, you know, and I think Mayo fans weren't guilty of avoiding that wave anyway on Saturday. And that's another thing, like 24,000 people there. It felt like it was full at the end. It was just electric. And the noise Mayo fans made in that second half and in extra time, oh my God, it was, you know, you wouldn't think it was a quarter full. Like, it was just a cauldron of noise.
And that was the thing, wasn't it? I think COVID has framed it. And I think that's why a lot of people took such joy out of Saturday night. And I know I certainly did. And you and I both, Rob, we you know, watched it and
I was very calm. I don't know what the TV pictures might have said, but I was very calm.
But it did feel like almost like a pre-COVID experience. Or I think we finally got back some of what we had been missing for the last 18 months. And, you know, and we had a late night with friends up until well after 4 in the morning. Which we haven't. I can't remember when we last did that. You know, and just the easy natured fun of that. You know, of just chatting with people and everyone in top form, and watching the match and laughing at the analysis. You know, halfway through and all that, and it just felt like you just said, "Wow, that's what we used to do." Like we used to have that kind of crack before, and it was great to have it back.
Yeah, Kevin Byrne, the Sun journalist and Irish boxing journalist, was just noted on the podcast the amount of contributors who said they were going for a pint. And I think there was a bit of COVID to that as well, because I think it was just like, oh, we're out. You know, I need to top this off with something.
Yeah, and it was actually one of the first things that struck me after the All-Ireland final in December was, you know, just the sheer anticlimactic nature of it. And obviously Dublin had won, but just it was so eerie. And you were thinking, my gosh, we wouldn't turn down Mayo winning the All-Ireland in such circumstances, but it would be so out of kilter with what we would have been expecting. And that's what was, I suppose, so special about the last day. There was the atmosphere that was there. And I think it's even instructive, I think, with how Mayo played. They were so determined not to concede goals. And I wonder, would it be a different scenario if there wasn't a crowd there, you know, because the goals can suck, conceding goals against the Dubs can give them such energy and can suck the life out of the opposition fans, you know, and, you know, was that why Mayo were so attentive in the first half, perhaps? But again, it was great to be back at a game. Like, we were at so many games last year and we always said it was a privilege to be there, but it was strange and it was eerie and it was a privilege, but it wasn't enjoyable.
No.
My God, the last day made up for that.
But it's amazing as well, Ed, because I think the combination of only being 24,000, I do wonder if it was only 24, it felt like a lot more. But the combination of that and the incredible ability of Mayo fans to hoover up tickets combined to make it a home game for us. So, you know, that is a good question about a goal, because you wonder, how loud would it have been if Dublin got a goal? But I can tell you, so it was just so loud at the end with our fans. I mean, it really did feel like a home match at the end, didn't it? I mean, it felt like we outnumbered them 4-1, and it was probably only 2-1, maybe, you know.
Okay, coming up in this podcast, in particular, we'll get to some of the controversial stuff a little bit later. We want to just think about what we've learned since. Edwin's written some great stuff in the Mayo News. It's a brilliant supplement to just devour over the next few days out in your shops and on the shelves now. And in the digital edition, wherever you're listening to us around the world, you can get it that way as well. So we're going to chat about that. There's some good stuff coming up a little bit later as well, as we have our Any Other Business and look ahead. But let's start there. And Edwin, I'll start with you, because you've written two pieces today, as you always do, that go back, you take a second look, you see what else you're seeing. And I loved your player ratings because obviously, and we can say this, some player ratings are done in the stadium under huge pressure. Yours obviously are done interpreting that second look, which, you know, gives it that bit of a fuller feel to it. And I think there was one or two numbers in there that went up a notch based on that second look. Am I right?
Yeah, and it like I spoke to one journalist who had to do player ratings before he went down to get reaction, like, and I said, gosh, I wish you luck with them. But I actually looked at them and I was impressed enough with them. I wouldn't have agreed quite with all of them, but there were player ratings for both teams as well, which is a really hard job. So we are lucky, or I am lucky in one sense that I get a bit of time to do it, but unlucky in the sense that no matter what player ratings you do, you'll have people complaining and saying
Mayo
that
fans
that was
disagreeing with a Mayo journalist.
I know it might be breaking news, Rob, but funnily enough, we don't always see eye to eye on these things. We get quite excited and animated about relatively trivial things, you know, like football in itself you could argue is trivial, but certainly what number you put beside a player can be trivial enough. But anyway, yeah. So no, certainly looking back at the game, I was quite taken by. I thought in real time, I was looking at an 8 for Ryan O'Donoghue because I thought he started poorly, but he grew into the game and took his scores very, very well. But it was only, and I thought he worked very hard. But it was only when I watched the game back, for instance, I saw just how effective he was in turning over possession, because it was such a frenzied second half there. And it was very hard to see guys buzzing around who exactly was doing what. And I was inclined to get him a little bit mixed up with Brian Walsh from time to time if they were on the wrong side of the pitch. And when I looked back, I was like, oh my God, that man has covered some amount of ground. He hasn't stopped working. And you see then the composure and the poise to kick the last score of the game, despite all the effort he'd put in, like, he was still going strong deep into extra time. So that just shows the stamina and the conditioning of these guys, you know. So yeah, there was certainly a second look is always helpful for player ratings, and a Saturday throw-in is a lot more helpful than a Sunday throw-in too for a Tuesday print deadline.
That's a fact. Just on that, John, we both felt Ryan was just so important right to the very end. As I said to Billy Joe afterwards, I mean, he was still going close to 100 on the 100 or the whatever, the 90 minute mark, probably more than like 95. But there was one scene afterwards, myself and Joe were watching back the game the second time, and we were just watching him chase after Owen Merchant on the most lost causes of all lost causes. He had no chance of catching that guy in a million years, and he still did a 35 to 40 meter sprint just to make sure that Owen knew he was there, and Owen just stopped, probably sensing him coming at him, and checked his run and went back, and Mayo got a turnover a few seconds later. John, it's those little details that maybe don't matter in the moment, but they matter in the bigger picture.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, for sure. And there were cameos like that all over the place. And I think as the game opened up, we got more and more of them, you know. I mean, and we had some spectacular contributions in the second half. I mean, everyone's talking about Andy Hashin now. Like, I mean, you know, is he in the frame for Young Player of the Year? I mean, I don't know who else is in the frame for it. I mean, and that's only after playing half a match of football, if you like. And just absolutely sensational. Jordan Flynn, I thought, was really impressive when he came on. You know, he was just so solid, and kicked a great score, and was full of running as well, and had the legs at the vital time. And I thought it was really interesting. I think we're going to hear Lee Keegan later on when he's talking about their level of fitness, and how he said how confident they were. That they had the legs on Dublin, that they have the legs on any team in Ireland. And it kind of showed it, didn't it, towards the end, because, you know, Tommy Conroy was just explosive in those last minutes. The way he went through the gap there of the three Dublin defenders. And I really loved what Oisín McConville said on the Sunday game when he said he eyed up Philly McMahon. He said, yeah, right, I'm going to have you. And straight through he went and rammed it over for the last score. And that was the score that put us ahead. But there were so many cameos like that. I mean, as I said, it was as the evening went on and as the match grew more open and unstructured that all those came to the fore.
Edwin, you know, you spoke a good bit about Tommy as well, because for you it was there was a certain element of too of the tandem, you know, the two of them working together, Ryan and Tommy.
Yeah, and I think there was huge responsibility on their shoulders the last evening, and they responded so, so well to that. So, like, they had Killian in there last year, they had Aiden in there sometimes last year, and this year in Championship. And we wondered, you know, about it being his best position. And then was he being played in there to provide a bit of leadership and a bit of stick and power for the ball inside, which the young lads around him. He was taken off after 48 minutes, and suddenly you're like, okay, you're on your own now, lads. And I think Jamie said it in last week's podcast, Jamie O'Shea, that the absence of Killian has taken them out of the shadows. They just have to, it's sink or swim. And my God, did they swim in the second half of that game. And I think it's the mark of, yeah. Sorry, John, yeah.
Yeah, no, just on that point as well, I think a lot of us in the stands were critical of James Carr in terms of kicking two wides, but you know, again, on the second view and reading back on it, he gets quite a lot of plaudits for his movement and the fact that it was his movement that opened the space for the other lads. What did you think of that, and what would you think of him starting the final as a result?
I felt he definitely unnerved Dublin. I felt he gave them something to think about, and he gave them something different to think about. The wides were, you know, they were both very kickable, but I certainly felt his like you say, his movement, and I thought his work rate as well, which is something that isn't always I suppose praised. I thought his work rate, particularly when Dublin were trying to take short kickouts, like he did an awful lot of work late in that second half. That eventually led to a turnover. He didn't force the turnover, but he just put enough initial pressure to keep them pinned in. And then a second or third man came in, and that created the turnover. So I felt he was very good in that regard. Gosh, starting for a final, I don't know. I think that could be a whole other podcast, as Mike would say.
But I guess you see, he did start in the league final against Kerry in 2019. And I think the Kerry lads are going to be wary of the players who played that day as well, and particularly Matty Ruan, you know, because they do have a healthy respect for Matty, you know, for giving the goal that he got down in Tralee, and then followed it up with a goal in the final. And you know, there are a number of lads like that could be putting their hands up, and it's arguable that James does better when he starts than when he comes on as a sub. So I don't know, it's just a thought. I mean, it's great that this is the great thing though, isn't it? I mean, there are so many conundrums now in terms of what is the first 15.
The mad thing was, we were talking in advance, would he start to McLaughlin's, and I felt that he should start Enda Hessian because Enda would be a better man for the first half, and that Owen McLaughlin is a man to bring on when the game is opening up. And then you start Owen McLaughlin and you're like, oh, you've lost a bit of impact off the bench. And then Enda Hessian comes on and absolutely blitzes Dublin and has had the most impact of a Mayo sub I can recall for quite some time. So it just goes to show, you know, we might have our opinions, but, you know, often we're showing up for, you know, knowing very little. But it just goes to show the adaptability that's there and the options that are there. And that's in a squad that's missing Killian O'Connor and Oisin Mullen, and obviously the six players that retired last year, you know. So it's just incredible the different options that have come through in that regard.
Yeah, and like I just noted Brian Walsh, you know, a good bit more on that second watch. I had a sense that he was involved in all these little things, and then you watch it again and you're like, oh yeah, wow. And there's another
example.
He was
very busy.
Yeah, and then I'm thinking of someone like Darren McHale, who we could all just dismiss now. So he didn't play very well for 25 minutes and he's taken off, but he was playing when Mayo weren't really motoring at
Absolutely.
All. So
yeah,
how can you say that he won't have some sort of massive impact when things are happening around him?
Yeah, he could have had a very good impact in the second half if he came on rather than started the game. And I think, you know, it's hard to be too harsh on anyone in the first half when the collective performance was so sluggish, you know, that, you know, it's kind of, you know, it's a different scenario than like, it's a bit easier to perform in the second half when so many around you are playing with high energy levels too.
Yeah, because the thing is, we have to look at substitutions in a more tactical and strategic way as well. It's not that, you know, or some guy isn't playing well, take him off. You know, it's there are strategic imperatives there. And I think James was absolutely right in that instance, because Hessian just brought this electrifying pace to the table that we didn't have, and just changed it up, you know. And I think the same with Aiden as well later on.
Edwin, what happened there though when he came on? Like, as I could see it, it looked like Owen McLaughlin went into the half forward line. But does that matter, or do we need to say that, or was it just all messed up, or is that what happened?
Yeah, no, he did seem to be a little bit further forward, and he started the second half at wing forward. But again, it was so fluid at that stage of the game, and particularly when Mayo, not so much towards the end of the first half, but in the second half when Mayo are driving on and have so much possession that, you know, wing backs and wing forwards are very interchangeable. So, yeah, that seemed to be how it was being played at the time, all right.
I got to ask you, we'll talk a bit about Lee Keegan after we hear from him a little bit later, and we're going to just pivot in a second for a break. But there's one segment of this chat that I really want to just give a few seconds to, which is your thoughts on Aidan O'Shea. First of all, just from your own kind of investigative work, you've kind of found out a little bit more about maybe the build up to the game. There's been some suggestions that he was carrying a bit of a knock, and that seems to be true now.
Yeah, and James Horan was asked, and he said he had an injury coming into the game, and there was no follow-up questions to that because I was there, and I assumed the injury he was talking about was the fractured cheekbone that he picked up in the Connacht final. But no, it wasn't. He was in a boot and on crutches a week out from the game with a heel injury. Now, only the physios and Aidan O'Shea and James Horan could tell you how much of a hindrance or an impact that had on what was, by his standards, a very poor performance the last day, and how much that impacted on the decision to take him off. I felt at the time when he was being taken off that would you bring him out the field, you know, but was the heel injury part of that? I don't know. Was it a case that he's just really struggling to get into the game? It's better to take him off. It's hard to know, but it certainly did appear to have an impact on it. The run into the game and certainly was far from ideal. And I suppose the hope would be that it hasn't been in any way aggravated by the game the last day and isn't an issue coming up to an All-Ireland final. But there is going to be some amount of talk. it's every podcast we talk about it, but there's going to be some amount of talk in the run-up to this All-Ireland final about what to do with Aidan O'Shea.
Where should we play him? Has anyone asked that yet? Someone needs to ask that question. Save it for another podcast. Let's take a break, thank our sponsors, and we'll be back with all the controversy.
You're listening to the Mayo News Football Podcast in association with Ceramic City Tiles and Bathrooms, Castlebar, Charlestown and Sligo, and Swinford Motors, your Toyota dealer for new and used cars in Mayo. Visit their website at swinfordmotors.com.
And we're back. Part two is all about the drama that unfolded around the edges. I have never, John Gunnigan, in the history of a Mayo victory, seen so much talk among Mayo people about referees, officiating, incidents. I can't remember a victory that had so much of a fallout, but that's how chaotic the officiating was. That's how unusual the level of like ill-disciplined challenges were and the amount of them. It was a strange, strange contest. And look, it's all around, first and foremost, the man we all want to wish well, Owen McLaughlin, to begin with, because he came out the worst.
Yeah. Well, I think there's kind of two issues there. There's that particular one, and in particular that incident. But also, I think there's the wider question of Conor Lane's officiating, which was, I think we'll all agree, was extremely poor. And on that point, it reminded me an awful lot of Limerick in 2014, because Conor Lane, to all intents and purposes, lost control of that game. And that's what happened with Cormac Riley down in Limerick.
Yeah.
He just literally lost control.
You're right, because the decisions were going left, right, and centre that day. It wasn't just us.
But the difference was down in Limerick, if you remember it, the Kerry lads copped onto that sooner, and they started taking these outrageous liberties, and then this found, oh, lo and behold, we're getting away with them. So you've a free then that's out on the sideline, and your man brings it on into the middle of the field and kicks it over, and there's no, you know, he's not pulled back for it. And it just got mad like that. Now, I think the difference the last night was that, because Lane, as they said in the parlance, lets the game flow. I mean, the stuff that we were doing in the tackle towards the end was just off the map. Like, we were picking up lads and hoofing them out of the way and taking the ball and going. Like, there wasn't a semblance of legality in terms of a lot of the tackling, and the same with Dublin as well. But I think we were ready for it, and we were ready to take advantage of that in a way that we weren't able to do in Limerick. And crucially, we won, Rob. Like, I think had we lost, you know, after that the horrendous challenge on Owen McLaughlin. If Baskill had stuck the ball in the net, we would have been beaten. And I tell you, this would be a very different discussion if that was the case, because it would be Limerick all over again. But it does. I mean, I do question, why did he get that game when he had the Connacht final? I think it probably was an advantage to us in that because we saw how much he let go, and I think that probably did help us. But he was the wrong man in the wrong place, and as well having Maurice Deegan on the sideline as well, you know, who we all have had so much history about. And I mean, I think again, Oisín McConville nailed the point so well. He identified where the two of them were versus the, you know, when the John Small challenge took place, they were both perfectly positioned to see what was happening.
Edwin, your thoughts on the challenge, right? Everyone here agrees it was red card. I think bar Peter Cafferkey, who was talking absolute nonsense and leave it at that, suggesting that it was a fair shoulder. There's virtually no serious pundit that isn't saying that that's a foul to begin with and a red card, and the only slight variation. Some people said, I'm not sure it's clear in the rules, but it should be a red card. So it's a red card. It's simple as that. But what's your thoughts beyond that in terms of the reaction to what Small did in that challenge?
Yeah, I think there's no doubt about it was a red card, and there's no doubt about it, it was a bad miss. The only thing I will say is I felt Conor Lane was slightly blindsided compared to Maurice Deegan in that situation. And what really infuriated me at the time, and watching it since, was not stopping the game. Whatever about, if you felt it wasn't a free and he was slightly the wrong side of it to have the best view, the way Owen McLaughlin fell, it was so obvious it was bad. It was really, really apparent. Everyone could see that. Not everyone could tell whether it was shoulder to shoulder or whether it was a poor hit, and people would say it had to be a poor hit for him to fall like that.
No, it doesn't.
I tell you, if you get a shoulder, if you get a shoulder to shoulder from someone like John Small running at speed, I tell you, you could be down in a heap with a dislocated shoulder, with rib injuries, with you know, it's not that simple. And I think that raises a bigger question. So, I look back at it carefully now, and John Small never had him properly lined up. Sometimes in these scenarios, a guy starts, and when you commit to a shoulder, you're leaving yourself open to the risk that if the man you're running at suddenly turns, you could make a frontal and you go, and you're committed at that stage. But John Small never had him lined up properly. He never had him lined up safely, shall I say, for a shoulder-to-shoulder hit. He was coming at him from an angle, not side-to-side. So that's a key point. So that's why it was particularly reckless. It wasn't as if a split-second move by Owen McLaughlin suddenly put him in danger. He didn't move his position from when the tackle started. But the other side of it too, and I think it's very, very interesting, is 3 or 4 years ago, or maybe 5 or 6 years ago, a frontal charge like that would have been, no, if it was spotted by the referee, typically it would have been given a free, you might have got a yellow, but red cards were rare. That has changed. That has changed, and rightly so, particularly when you see the damage that it can do the last day. But that raises a bigger question then about the... should you be making these type of hits if you're a player anyway, running the risk of a red card for a shoulder-to-shoulder hit? We see the, you know, we'll all remember Colin Boyle's big hit on Damien Comer earlier in last decade, and the energy that gave the crowd, and the energy it took away from Galway. But at the same time, you have to ask yourself, a shoulder by its very nature, when a player is lining up someone, he's trying to hurt him, even with a fair shoulder. He's trying to knock him down, trying to knock the wind out of his sails. Is that something that will continue long term in the GA? I don't know if it will, particularly when the risks of mistiming it and a red card that follow are so great. So I don't know. That could be. And I don't want to over sanitize the game. You know, it's you like to see a certain amount of ferocity, but I'm just not too sure. Like you know, especially if you look at, you know, John Small could be playing and shouldering someone like that in a club game in Dublin against, you know, a 19-year-old that has very little work done in the gym. And he could send him to hospital as well with a perfectly fair tackle. You know, particularly when you look at the power of inter-county players now compared to 10, 20 years ago, I think that could be, that should be part of the discussion as well. Go on, John, sorry.
No, Rob, I mean, obviously from your other area of expertise in terms of rugby, obviously they introduce principles of duty of care and stuff like that, which could be relevant here, because you know, there currently is no duty of care in Gaelic football. You can steam in and clearly, and you can do whatever you want. And there's no sanction, and it's sort of, oh, it was slightly mistimed. And then you fools like Peter Caffrey, you know, trying to claim that it was okay. But, you know, the debate has moved on significantly in rugby, like in terms of, you know, you can't do something like, you know, if you lift a fella off the ground, you have to get him back down again. You know, is there anything in that?
What's critical there is the point of contact was to the head. So it would have been a straight red and quite a significant ban as well. So, yeah, it's working. It's an enormous debate, lads. I mean, the amount of podcasts I've done, even around Connacht Rugby and chats on Galway FM, and the amount of stuff that's been talked about it, because it's been really difficult for players to change their mindset. And maybe we're missing this in Gaelic football. I mean, if you took Colin Boyle halfway through his career and asked him to take that out of his game, that's going to take some time, and it would lead to some red cards. Like Bundy Aki took a red card in the Irish England game in the Six Nations, and it was such a cruel red card in one sense, because any going over the previous years it was a brilliant tackle, but based on player safety, duty of care is an interesting point on a very good Second Captains podcast. I say sign up to it, because it's a brilliant show, as you all know, and they're leading the way with what they do. But Paul Flynn today was arguing that he didn't think the players had a duty of care. That's up to the officials. I don't know. I don't even necessarily want to get into that. But what I do want to say, Edwin, and I just want to double down on this, is If the GA are going to get serious about concussion, then they have to get serious about the official team getting reprimanded. Nothing more than that. I just want to know that they're in a room somewhere on a Zoom call, spending an hour and a half, 2 hours, and possibly even going on some sort of like 1 or 2 hour concussion awareness course to recap, just to be sure that they realized that a player's safety was in danger when he went down like that, and they just missed it. And by God, we need to forgive them for making mistakes, because these things happen. But having said that, if you looked at it, and you can take it from here, Edwin, but it was clear that the Mayo medical team were furious on two occasions on that pitch. On that one time, they looked absolutely furious with the situation that unfolded and their player being in danger. And the second time, and I could see it because it was much closer to us, was when James Carr took a hit from Paddy Small, which replay showed clearly was a high challenge, where the first piece of contact was fist to the chin. Did he mean to punch him in the face? No, but that's still a red card because it's a strike to the face. But most importantly, is the Mayo medical team, again, were very annoyed because the player was in danger. Do we know whether he was suffering concussion or not? We don't know, but they were concerned for his well-being, and they felt twice. Now the officials just weren't aware of that.
Yeah, and I think it goes back to, again, the most frustrating part of that was the fact that the game wasn't stopped, and we've seen it stopped for the Owen McLaughlin incident. We've seen it stopped so often for much more trivial, shall we say, concerns. And but you know, there's so much welcome progression in the area of head injuries and the awareness involved. And like you could just see Dr. Sean Moffat when he went on, he was furious, and you could see James Horn as well. And you know, you're right, like it was a sliding doors moment. If that goal goes in from Colin Basquell, it probably is game over. I wouldn't say for certain it was, because it was Mayo in that type of mood, but it probably is. And again, do you know, the discussions this week, I don't think Conor Lane will be coming to Achill or Ballina for his holidays for the rest of the year anyway.
Yeah, and you know what? At the end of the day, John Small, Conor Lane, there are people just trying to do their best. You may not like John Small because he ankle tripped Andy Moran, or he hit Killian O'Connor, and you may say there's been a collection of different things happening. But the bottom line is we can kind of dance around this issue as much as we like. There's still people involved. So I think, you know, we just want to see things done better. And I think the most important thing is people want to see the game stopped in those situations. Red card, no red card, whatever, it was a free. Don't, just get it right and be aware of player safety on the pitch, and we'd be happier. Listen, Kevin McStay took an awful pounding, Edwin. Why are we so worked up about this? I mean, like, look, even if we are, I looked at some of the people who were commenting on Kevin McStay on Twitter, and I noticed John wants to come in here, so we'll start with John, then to Edwin. I noted that they were more talking about Kevin McStay than Conor Lane or John Small or the officiating. I was just like, come on, guys. He's not the key problem here if you disagree with him.
Yeah, no, and it rose rapidly on the blog in the aftermath of the game, and I was quite shocked by it, I have to say, because I've never seen such that level of anger after a win. Like, I was expecting happy town after the match, and it went on, you know, well into the following day, and despite several warnings and my taking down several comments and you know, reprimanding people, and it just continued. And it was a classic kind of shoot the messenger moment, you know, in that it was like Kevin McStay was at fault, you know, and that if Kevin McStay had called it right, then the play would have been stopped almost. It was that kind of stupidity, you know. But it was very, very hard to fathom it, really, in terms of, now I think, you know, it's sort of, people wanted him to be in our corner, and that's not his job. And you know, people were, you know, dragging up last year, and he wasn't in our corner with Kevin, with Lee Keegan. He's not in our corner now, and sort of therefore he's guilty, and we're going to hang him from the nearest lamppost. And yeah, it was all a bit unedifying, I have to say.
Yeah, it was like I was maybe 5 yards behind where Kevin would have been positioned, and I have to say I couldn't see straight away whether it was a fair shoulder or not. And I think the reason people are emotional and get animated is a number of different reasons, but I think the biggest single reason is there's a young lad from Westport who now will probably not be playing in an All-Ireland final, and who had to have surgery on Sunday with what I think is a double jaw fracture. And you know, that is the bottom line. But you know, there's this kind of vibe going out there that Kevin didn't call it because he didn't want to upset the Dubs, or that he was trying to be too neutral or whatever. Like, we've had Kevin McStay on this podcast. He is so professional and considered and treats his job extremely seriously. And if Kevin saw clearly on the night what we all saw subsequently, you know, he would have called it out. He called out other things during the game. He called, for instance, that Davy Byrne should have got a black card in the second half. Technically, he possibly shouldn't have, because it was a pull back rather than a pull down, you know. But, you know, does that mean that he's been pro-Mayo in that scenario? No, it doesn't. It means he's trying to call a thing when there is so much going on in that moment. I just think that after such a big win, I just think we could be a little bit calmer and a little bit, you know, turning on one of our own like that. I just think it's not a good look. It's not a good look at all. And I think people can say that he called it wrong, which he did, but they can do it in a careful, a considerate, a balanced manner. But far too many people just lost the run of themselves with this.
100%. Look, we're all aware, and we're not going back over it because Mayo have beaten Dublin and they're going to an All-Ireland final. But we're all aware of the memories we have of players being dragged down in the last second of a game and what that visually looked like. And we barely mentioned it on the post-game podcast because we had lost the game. We just let it go. But things have been building up, and we understand your frustration at some of the things that haven't been called in the past against Dublin. And that this was a culmination of a lot of things. Having said that, it's about just balancing your reaction, as Edmund says. I think we've covered that enough. Let's hear from Lee Keegan after the match. I just want to pay attention to A, a great interview, but B, just the last answer. It was a momentary insight into the world of a dressing room at halftime with James Horan speaking to his team.
Congratulations, you are AOB man of the match. Before I ask you any questions, I just want you to soak it all in. The green and red of Mayo ringing out, the fans behind me singing your name. How does it feel?
Yeah, listen, it's brilliant. You know, when you come up here today against Dublin, probably one of the greatest teams we've ever come across, and playing them over the last 10, 12 years, we know what we have to go up against. So listen, to have our supporters back here today really give us the extra bit of life and belief and extra time. But as I always say, we've 3 weeks now to dust ourselves down and get back to the nitty-gritty during the week. So listen, today is a really milestone moment for ourselves and us personally, but it's worth nothing if we don't go on now and really step on as a team. So
I just say today is an extremely nice moment. You've been through so many battles and you've come out on the wrong end of so many results in big matches at the sharp end of the championship, and indeed against this Dublin team. What's the overriding emotion at this moment?
Probably a lot of relief, to be honest. As you said there, we've...
Right on cue, Lee.
It's obviously a huge relief to get over the line. As I said, we're 2012 was our last victory here against Dublin, so today is a huge moment. But you see the transitional group we have. We have very little of the team that's kind of come from the 17-16 final. So, unfortunately, I'm one of the older statesmen, so I've seen the whole thing come and go in like 10 years. So, listen, we're going to soak it in tonight, get a bit of recovery in the morning. But just to all our Mayo fans here today, it means so much to us. And as I said, it's only a stepping stone for this squad again.
So much resilience and so much never say die attitude, but what got you over the line in terms of the performance, Lee?
Youth, I think. No, listen, internally we know what we're about. We have a serious SC coach in Conor Finn, so we knew we were coming down the stretch. We had the legs in any team in the country, so that's really stood to us. And I suppose today, you know, we have to put our hands up and say it was the hard work that really got us over the line. It wasn't flashy, it wasn't pretty, but as you said, it was more resilient and more dogged. So listen, any day you come up to Crow Park and beat Dublin in an All-Ireland semi-final, it's a good day, and a day you need to celebrate and enjoy. And we will enjoy it. Listen, days like this don't come too often, and I suppose the last 2 years with a pandemic and everything, you have to enjoy these moments. And I just can't wait to see my family, my friends, and yo, this is what it's all about. This is why you play GAA, and I'm just delighted, to be honest. I'm really over the moon.
Leo, we'll let you join the celebration. My final question, though, what was the message at halftime from the management team? Because it's not often we see a Dublin team losing the third quarter, because you really pressed on then.
I think it was similar to the Galway game, to be honest. I suppose we came out, we were very tense off, we were making a lot of mistakes. James' message all the time is just relax, breathe, take it all in. We've 35 minutes to make up for the last 35 minutes, so there's always going to be time. And as I said, fitness and SC, we really stand to that with Conor Finn. So, and we just really expressed ourselves second half, and we really went at it, and that was probably the biggest difference.
Lee Keegan, you're a gentleman. Thanks so much for your time.
You're listening to the Mayo News Football Podcast in association with Ceramic City Tiles and Bathrooms, Castlebar, Charlestown and Sligo, and Swinford Motors, your Toyota dealer for new and used cars in Mayo. Visit their website at swinfordmotors.com.
So that's the voice of Lee Keegan. Edwin was just fascinated just to get that little glimpse of what James Horan said to them at halftime. And that's, you know, immediately going towards the zen-like, lads, just think this through.
Yeah, and it's kind of what we're always told by James Horan, but we're kind of, you know, that, oh yeah, things were calm at halftime and no, there weren't any, you know, angry words or whatever. And sometimes, well, certainly in the earlier years, you were like, yeah, he's just spinning a line here, like, you know. But the more you talk to people and the more you watch and you notice behaviors, I suppose, the more you realize that this is the case. And I think that's the single biggest tribute I could pay to James Horan, is that at halftime in that game, 6 points down to a 7-in-a-row chasing Dublin team, Mayo weren't fazed. They weren't rattled. They weren't cowed. That group of players in there had the self-belief and the confidence that this game was far from over, and that it was down to them to change it, that they just needed to improve, that they were much better than they were. And anyone who's ever been in a dressing room will know how hard it is when you're behind against such a good team as Dublin are. And granted, they were poor in the second half the last day. But the mindset that Mayo had to be in, and the self-belief that they had, that comes back to James Horan. It obviously comes back to individual confidence as well, but that's fostered in a collective that's driven by the manager. And I think we can talk about his tactical changes the last day and how good they were. And I felt it was his best ever day on the line in terms of adapting to the game as it was playing out in front of him. But I think beyond that, how the level of belief that his teams play with, the confidence in their own ability, as articulated there by Lee in that interview, that's just incredible. And it's you know, as Mayo people, we're not used to that, because we're not used to winning. And there's been, prior to, you know, 2011, there's been, you know, a lot of dark days. But it's just a very different outlook now, you know. And they will always, well, if they start poorly, they will respond and they will react and they will come up with the goods.
John, just one thing. Lee Keegan, it was said by Malachy Clerk, and it drew my attention to the fact, you know, that he moved to Mayo in his teens or as a young lad, and didn't, he says something like he hadn't watched the 2006 final. And I was thinking to myself, James Horan probably didn't watch the 1989 final. Do you know what I mean? There's something about their characters that they're not swept along with it, and they bring that calmness. So maybe the link between the two of them there is interesting.
Probably is. Yeah, sure. Lee still talks like a cabin man. but he's one of ours. He's one of ours. He's our cabin man. No, but the thought has just struck me there, though, Rob. The time that we sat down with James, you know, twice since he's come back. But my mind is going back to the first night, that very windy night in Loch Lanna. Do you remember? And look at what he's delivered since then. You know, a league title, two Connacht titles, and back in two All-Ireland finals. I mean, that's pretty spectacular going. I mean, and, you know, I mean, I don't know if we can bottle what this guy brings to the table, but it would sell by the great load.
Going back to Lee Keegan as well, I just thought the last day he was he was my man of the match in the player ratings. I thought he was just immense. But there was one little cameo which I thought was absolutely brilliant. It was actually in the lead up to Colin Basquell's black card, which was another incident that I thought Conor Lane got wrong. But you know, I think the Dubs can't really complain compared to some of the red cards they avoided. But Lee Keegan and John Small clashed, and then they went to square up to one another. And they just started laughing at each other because they both knew like they were wasting their time messing with each other. But Keegan picked up what you could see was appeared to be a dead leg, and he was limping badly, and he was trying to just walk it off and hoping to stay out of the play. Next thing, Stephen Cohen kicks the free to him, and he's like, oh, feck it. I need to run this off, not just run it off, but carry the ball in the second half or in the first half of extra time here. And he runs kind of sluggishly and hand passes it back to Cohen, and suddenly says, do you know what? That actually did me no harm. And then he gallops off to take the return, and he's gone. Like, and it was such a perfect Keegan cameo. It was like, the body would be all right. I'd be fine. I'll just drive through it. And suddenly he's fine again. And if you watch it back, you can see the end of it, but you won't see him limping at the start. But I was watching him limping and thinking, God, that's a very bad limp. He's gone. But you're like, again, when is he ever gone? Like, he's just a phenomenal piece of stuff.
John, we could talk about this game and the video and every, you could be talking about like Conor Loftus and the point you kicked. You could talk about, you mentioned him earlier, Flynn, what a contribution from the, we could just go on and people are doing that. And I think I quoted a few different people, but Kieran Murphy was saying, for the love of God, would people stop talking about Mayo fans calming down and all that? Would you enjoy this? What's the point of sport if you can't enjoy this? You know, it's key, isn't it, that we do just revel in it a bit longer. We got some days before the other semi-final even takes place.
Yeah, well, that's it. We have the luxury this time.
Is it an advantage?
I think it is because, you know, there were a lot of tired bodies, I'd say, the last day. And we know, you know, there were some injuries from the guys who were playing. We don't know what the situation is with Oisin Mullen as to whether or not he'd be back in time, but it certainly 4 weeks gives him a decent shot, you would have thought. So I think it's no harm at all. And you know, and I think we do need that bit of extra time to savor this win to the full. Wait, take our own sweet time and see what the other semi-final brings. And then there's 2 weeks after that to lead up to the final. So I actually think it is ideal because I do think things will begin to calm down after that other semi-final is played. And I think then the tempo changes. Then we'll stop talking about the Dublin win, and then we'll start talking seriously about the All-Ireland. And I think, you, as you said before, Rob, this is different now. This is like the big bad wolf ain't round anymore. Like this is like 1996. This is like 2012, could be even like 89. Do you know what I mean? There's nothing preordained about this. You know, we're not going in, you know, the way we were in 04 or God love us in 06 even, like, you know, which was the last time we played Kerry. We haven't been beaten by Kerry in Croke Park since 2011.
Don't write Tyrone off.
Yeah. Well, it's very hard not to, given the COVID situation. But that's fair. Like, we've never played Tyrone in an All-Ireland final, but have a very good record against them in Croke Park. So I think this is the mood music is going to be different going into this All-Ireland compared to probably any finals since the Donegal one. So yeah, I think it's going to be a fun time. Should be a fun time over the next few weeks.
Right. Any other business? Anything else to add to this? Let's set the scene as best we can, and we've kind of filled the void, Edwin.
Yeah, I'm going to have to put on my Brafey hat here and just talk about Rob Henley's score to bring it extra time. I just think it was. I was saying afterwards that there was so many talking points, and on any other day that would be head and shoulder above everything else. But it just had to take its line in, you know, and a blockbuster of a game. But I just think that the tale of redemption that was involved there, and I know Robbie since he was in national school, you know, I've worked with him, I've played with him in Brafey, and Andy Moran was saying it there earlier and on the News Talk podcast with Paddy Andrews, that he's the best teammate he's ever had. And coming from Andy Moore, that is, that says an awful lot about the type of guy Robbie Henley is. And he's just the nicest fella, like, and you won't find anyone in Brafe disagreeing with that statement either. He's a mighty bit of stuff, and he's had some tough days, and some of the stuff he's had to put up with has just been, you know, no guy should have to endure it. Criticism is one thing, but, you know, the abuse he's taken from, not just from people in the, you know, out and about on the streets, but from pundits as well. And I just felt the strength of character to keep going and going and going. And my God, did he have a redemption on Saturday night. And the drama at the end, first one, him shanking it, and then having to wait so long for the second one while Stephen Cohen realised, oh, I'm holding it up, am I? And I'm up in Robbie's goal practically. And he had to run off, and Robbie had to wait maybe a minute, holding the ball, put it down and put it over the bar, and brought the game to extra time. And it's just, it's one of the moments of the last decade, and there's been so many of them, but that was just such a special moment. And it was just, it couldn't happen to a nicer fella.
Let's give Edwin the final word. Keep that tough, folks. Join us next week. Lots more podcasts. We're planning. We'll tell you more when we know more.